Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. This is part two of the Mega Podcast. Me, Mark Stein, Rick Bucher, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Let's get it on. Hey, wait, I have a topic I wanted to hit quickly because you guys are so around this stuff all the time. Because I got some emails about the Antoine Walker thing, and people are confused how a guy that makes $110 million could not have any of that money left. And I keep writing about how David Stern knows from the 99 lockout that some of these guys are living paycheck to paycheck, even though they have eight-figure contracts. And yep. The readers are just dumbfounded by this. They don't understand how somebody can just spend $75 million. From your experiences covering the teams, what have you guys seen to kind of reinforce that point?
Well, first of all, I think by and large, the average fan says, you know, Antoine Walker got $110 million and how could you possibly spend that in a lifetime? First of all, let's cut it in half.
Yep.
For taxes.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, you're talking about a guy who, is not just taking care of himself or his immediate family. There's extended family of at least 20, 25, 30 people. And when you start talking about cars and houses and I'm going to give this person $10,000-$15,000, that none of that money is generating more money. All of it is going out, and it's going out in frivolous ways that suddenly cost you more. And guys who've never had money I've had this conversation with a lot of players, with a lot of agents, with a lot of GMs. When you've never had money and suddenly somebody is handing you $50 million, you're under the impression that not only is that never going to run out, but you are always going to find a way to get more.
Yeah.
And so suddenly, when you've just been taking care of everybody, and there's a sense of, I'm obligated because I'm the guy who won the lot among the people that I grew up with my family. And, you know, the average person, they say, hey, well, you know what? You got to be disciplined. You got to do this. You got to do that. When you've come up from nothing and when you've made a pact with all your buddies that whoever is going to take care of the rest and you have any sense of morality, you're going to want to take care of everybody else. And so, when I look at it, it doesn't surprise me, and I would dare say that you take the average person in the same situation, they'd find themselves in the same predicament.
What do you think, Stanimo?
I think he hit pretty much all the pertinent points. I think, obviously, spending gets out of whack. You're living in a world that's just not real. You know, the hotels these guys are in, the cars that are flying
yep.
around. I mean, everybody's got $50,000 cars. I mean, certainly that impacts your spending, but also the family thing. I mean, I'm sure Buke's been around guys where you know their phone rings and they get hit with these, you know, my life is on the line situations. That stuff happens
yep.
all the time.
All the time.
On a
all
daily
the time.
Basis.
And that's
and
why
you know, and the other there's also, you know, the thing you hit on, Steiny, is that the pressure in the locker room. I mean, the vets put unbelievable pressure on the guys coming in to, you know, what they're driving, what they're wearing, where they're going, how, you know, where they're hanging, all of that. And guys get sucked into that at a time where they don't have money. And so they're already in arrears when they get that first contract.
I've covered every major sport in this country, certainly not as extensively as I've covered the NBA, but never in my I've been in baseball locker rooms, NFL, NHL, you name it, but in the NBA, even the writers get looked up and down on their clothes, what they're wearing. So the players, it's times 10. I mean, times 20. Every guy for some, I mean, it's just, it's all about, you know, what kind of gear you got. I mean, so there's no question that peer pressure factor is huge.
Well, and I think back to Antoine, I think the worst thing that ever happened to him was he became close with Michael Jordan. And now he's going to Las Vegas or Atlantic City with Jordan. Yep. Jordan's betting $100,000 a hand or whatever he's doing. Antoine's got to feel like he's got to do it. I think stuff like that happens a lot more often than maybe people realize.
The stories of guys going, and here's the other thing. I mean, if you're going to go and you want to bet and you want to make a bet that's going to impact, that you're going to get a little juice out of, hey, you know, I've actually got some money on the line. Those numbers for a guy who's pulling down 10, 15 million a year, a $20 bet is not, that's like us throwing, you know, nickels and dimes out there.
Yeah.
So they've got to raise the ante for it to feel like, hey, you know what? I may actually pull something back if I win here.
So do you guys both agree that Stern knows this time? He learned from 10 years ago that this time around he is in control. He always has the option to cut off the league for a couple months, and the players are going to fall in line.
I don't think I don't think he's thinking about Billy Hunter. I don't think the Players Association is what he's worried about. It's his owners that he's worried about this time. That's,
why?
You know, that's the difference.
Well, what
the
is he
owners
worried about?
Are not just going to take whatever he says. You know, Bill Duffy, the agent, had a great quote the other day. 80% of the teams in the NBA right now think economics first, and so all the the teams fall into these categories. You've got those 4, 5, 6 teams that are still spending big and trying to win it all. Then you've got these other teams that just want to save money and are freaked out. And so that's where the pressure is coming from on Stern, is to get to, you know, to come up with this system that keeps his owners happy. That's really the difference, where in years past we always said, oh, the owners will do whatever Stern wants. I don't think that's the case anymore.
I honestly don't believe that Stern is the hardest line guy in the room when he's with the owners right now. And I honestly don't feel that he wants to see a work stoppage, because with everything the way it is, I don't know that would be a positive for all of the money that it might save them. And quite honestly, the sense that I get from the players union is they know if Stern learned from the last time, the players union learned something too. And they're looking to make the best possible deal they can ahead of time. And what they're experiencing right now is sending that message. I mean, whether it's in Europe or look, you can say that Jason Kidd is overpaid. He took a 60% pay cut. Guys left and right have done that. There are guys, we got Lamar Odom and David Lee who can't get contracts. I believe that the players are well aware of where this is, and I don't know that it's going to take a hard line to get it done. But if it does, I would dare say there are owners that are going to be pushing David Stern to take that hard line, and that's going to be different than the way it was the last time.
Yeah, but don't you think the agents, as they did the last time, are going to be the ones that cause a lot of the problems there?
I just don't think that they have the juice. I believe that the agents right now are struggling with trying, you know, they've had to work so hard to convince their guys that, hey, this is the new economic reality, and, you know, stay with me because we'll find other ways to make money for you. That I may be wrong on this, but the sense that I get from talking to agents and players and the union is, I don't know that they have the heart to be militant, and with that in mind, I believe they're going to try to make the best deal possible. Now, whether the owners in the room that say, you know what, we want to go for blood, we want it all, We want to guarantee ourselves, we want to guarantee all of us profits no matter what. If it comes to that, you know, that could be killing the golden goose in my mind. But that's the battle that Stern is going to have, is that he's going to have some guys that are going to say, we want cost, we don't want just cost certainty, we want profit certainty. And if that means shutting it down for 6 months, we should go ahead and do that.
And I think along those lines, they have to be protected for any situation where the cap drops like it did this year and probably next year too, where they probably are going to want to tie in everybody's salaries. And if the cap drops, then the salaries drop by the same percentage. And I think that's where the agents are going to get mad, because now you're basically removing money out of contracts they signed. And I think that could be the most contentious thing.
Yeah, but I think it's worse for agents now when they, I mean, I don't think they like going to their guys and saying there's nothing out there for you. I mean, which is, it's never been this hard to, it's so hard to get a summer league job right now.
Right.
I mean, it's never been hard to get a summer league job. All these teams are going to carry 13 guys next year instead of 15. I mean, 20, 30 jobs gone like that just from last year.
I mean, look at the teams that didn't even have summer league teams.
Exactly.
And look at the teams that have, I mean, assistant coaches who have had to take pay cuts, or staffs who have been reduced. I mean, it is
advanced scouting, which is one of really the coolest parts of this league, something that's completely undercovered. How amazing it is that in this sport, every team knows each other's plays inside and out. I don't think there's any other sport like it, where you literally know exactly what the other team's running. That's what teams are cutting, because, I mean, teams are just looking to slice anywhere they can right now.
Steiny Mo, do you think that there is an agent right now that has as much power as David Falk did in 1998, 1999, that actually has sway over the players' union?
I don't know if...
Because it doesn't seem like there is one.
No, I mean, there's more guys at that level, really.
Who were you going to say?
Closest guy would be Arn Tellem. And I don't... But I don't see it. I don't think it's possible to have that, because, let's face it, that was a unique situation for Falk, because he had one guy.
Yeah.
More than anything else, he had one guy who drove the league. And there is no one guy right now. And that was, you know, that was also good. Economically, we were in the dot-com boom the last time that we saw Michael Jordan in his heyday. Times have changed dramatically. I don't see any agent. I don't see any group of agents being able to band together again, because this is not, you know, what's funny is everybody was making a big deal about Europe suddenly becoming a player and European teams and foreign teams putting out $50 million and being the lure away of Kobe Bryant or LeBron James. How long did that last? Like a season and a half? As soon as the Russian billionaire, the oil billionaires took a dive, suddenly there was the European market dried up. And that was the whole fallacy there. And that's the issue that pro basketball players face right now, is that this isn't just an NBA thing. And this is a worldwide issue in terms of getting paid the way they want.
And the thing is, for all the things, you know, we criticize refereeing, we criticize all these teams for only making financial moves, in spite of all that, interest is so high. I mean, ratings were better last year. Certainly, you know, on all the traffic stuff we measure, NBA interest is better than ever, higher than ever. I mean, you have to think that those things seep into the minds of the people at the negotiating table, and they realize how much is at stake if there's a work stoppage for even one day. And the comment that I've heard from multiple teams, if this thing gets to a work stoppage, if this goes one day into a work stoppage, it's going to be a long one, because then the lockout has started and they're going to hold out for major, major, major changes. That thing, it's not going to be a 30-day lockout or a 60-day lockout. If this thing gets to that point, who knows how long it's going to take to get the league back on the floor.
I agree. I think it gets blown up at that point.
And then once you get back on the floor, how long does it take? Because, look, people don't have a whole lot of discretionary income right now anyway. So if you take them, if you take an option off the board, what little discretionary income they have, they're going to be spending, they're going to be spending elsewhere, or they're going to suddenly realize, hey, you know what? I don't need to spend that. I don't need to have season tickets. And I believe that's one of the reasons why you've seen the numbers for us. It, and it's pretty, I think it's, there's historical precedent that when things go bad, people don't go on vacation, they don't buy tickets, they watch more TV. So it's really should not that much of a surprise that our ratings would be doing better at a time when people don't, they're going to sit home and they're going to watch a game as opposed to spend the money to go out and see it live.
Do you think out of the guys in the players union, the vets, because last time it was a pretty motley crew of vets, this time around it seems like guys with a little bit better sense. Who do you think are going to be the big power brokers from the player side?
Derek Fisher, obviously, as the union president, as a guy who I believe is pretty smart, and in spite of the fact that you think he can't move anymore, I believe still has authority. He's got rings. He's, you know, I think guys look at what he's done with his career and say, that guy made a lot of money. He was smart. He maximized everything he had. I honestly believe that if the union is smart, and I, from some conversations I've had with Derek, I believe they're looking this way, is that they're not going to be, this is not going to be just a monetary thing. They're going to be looking at ways to, one, the percentages, hey, look, okay, we know we got to take a hit. All we want is built in that if things get better, that things get better for us too, that we share in whatever profit there may be. And meanwhile, what we'd like is we'd like better medical standards. We'd like sort of the ancillary things that that make life a little bit better. Look for those things to add into the collective bargaining agreement rather than just looking hardline and saying, you know what, we want maximum contracts at this level and we want minimum contracts here. I believe they're going to try to find sort of non-monetary ways to negotiate improvement in their overall lives.
I know what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see the influential 30-somethings in this league. You know, your Celtics big three, guys like Nash, anybody in that category, they're the ones who kind of need to step forward here and make it, you know, really kind of get some unity in the players union, which has never been like the baseball union where it's a real unified group. Because these are guys that if there's a lockout, I mean, their careers could be over. You know, if there's a year or two lockout, there's a group of guys who can't afford to lose a year or two because they're too close to the end. So, I mean, that's what I want to see.
Well, you want them in there, but the bottom line is that unless LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant are involved and committed and say, just lead the charge in whichever way it may be, that if they are not first and foremost and they do not make their presence felt, that's the only shot. That's the only shot the union has to carry any sway.
Well, do you think the Redeem
Team helps?
At the
end of the day, that's what the league's built on.
Maybe the Redeem Team helps in that respect? Because a lot of these guys spend a lot of time together now. You know?
I would be pleasantly surprised if it went that way, but I believe being a patriot and resurrecting the status of United States basketball is still a little different than being a labor activist.
No, I'm with you on that. I'm saying that
you're asking them to go another step.
I'm saying that these guys have made connections that 10 years ago maybe you wouldn't have made, the same kind of friendships. Because it seems like the guys that were on that last Olympic team, they're actually friends.
Yeah, no question about that. I think it's more obvious than it was. It's long been a millionaire's club. Long been guy, you know, the Bird and Magic actually, and, you know, doing the commercial. They didn't like each other. They did a commercial together. Suddenly that relationship changed a little bit, and why did it? Because they both were in commerce. Hey, let's make some money together. And once that happens, that whole competitive angle changes, and I don't know that it's ever come back since then. So I don't know that it's really that different. I think guys have just become more accepted to be, to have kissy face before games and go and hang out with each other the night before and sleep at each other's houses and do all the stuff that we look at and go, come on, don't you guys want to beat each other a little more than that?
It's impossible. I had Kevin Love on my podcast, and he knows all the guys in his draft class and the last draft class he's known since he was like 14.
Yeah.
How do you hold a grudge against somebody you've known since you were going through puberty with them? Stand him up.
Unless of course some sort of grudge has developed over the years, which you do get those too.
Kevin Love, your new favorite reporter.
Right. Well, as always with the grudges, it's always either women or poker were the two reasons. Steiny Mo, if you had to pick one team to win the title right now, who would it be? So let's say Odom's going to Miami. I'll throw that as the caveat.
San Antonio.
I think that's my pick too, Buke.
Well, I would say San Antonio, but since you two said it, I'm going to take Boston.
Wow. What happens? If teams go small against us, what happens?
Bruce Bowen.
Oh,
oof.
God. Really? So bummed out right now.
Well,
Bruce
here's
Bowen?
The question. Here's the question. Who's going to go small against you?
Well, thank God Orlando screwed that up.
Exactly. Exactly.
I guess
Chicago, maybe, but not really.
Yeah, not until the finals, at least. Yeah, you're
Wait,
right.
You don't
Maybe
like Bruce
nobody.
Bowen coming in for a nice little last-minute addition to the squad?
Look, is he coming
Mr.
in Fullerton, a coffin?
Mr. Cal State Fullerton, just stop it already.
He was washed up two years ago.
I don't know if you, by the way, I don't know if you saw the little tweet fest.
Yeah.
The love among the Fullerton State guys. It was sickening.
It's disgusting. They stick together.
That's a public forum. Not PDA, okay? Too much PDA.
I'm going to throw this out with the San Antonio thing. Beyond the three chain, the three guys that they added, I think they had the best front eight they've ever had, top eight. But how about this? Duncan, since late April, hasn't been doing anything. Ginobili's been resting all summer. These guys are actually going to have, like, their bodies for the first time
Stop
in a while,
it.
You know? I'm just
Stop
saying.
It.
What?
Stop
That's
it.
Where I'm
Stop
a little
it.
Worried because... Or I would be worried if I were a Spurs fan, I should say.
What?
Duncan looked ridiculously good until the All-Star break. With no discernible trauma, was never the same after that, and was basically down to one leg in the Dallas series. Now, he was still throwing up 25 and 12 on that one leg.
Yeah.
But we do have to acknowledge that whether he's touched the ball or not since May, he does have some mileage on the tires here.
Hmm. Well, I mean, he's at the point where if it's going to start declining, it should happen pretty soon. My whole thing is I'm of the belief, and I really feel like this is the reason that the Celtics lost Game 7 against Orlando. I think mentally, Pierce and Allen had kind of checked out. They knew that with the team they had, this crummy team that barely made it through round two without KG, they just felt like they were going to get smoked against the Cavs. There was that urgency was just kind of removed by the end of that series. It was so tough for them to make it through round two. And I think the same case was with the Spurs last year. I think Duncan realized when Ginobili was out, all right, well, I'm obviously not going to win the title. And I think maybe physically you start to break down a little where maybe you wouldn't have otherwise. Does that make sense?
I don't know that you break down physically, but I think mentally the idea that you're going for broke, when you look at what you've got, once things start to go against you, I think it's a little easier to give in.
That's what I mean.
Say, you know what?
My leg hurts.
I can't believe we are where we are, and I'm going to beat myself to death, to take a real beating the next round or the next game or whatever? I believe there's some of that. But I think with Boston, I don't know that those guys checked out. I really believe the weight, what they have to carry, and the reason that they were good in winning the title was because no one guy had to carry the load every night. And let's face it, with what they had left by the end, if those guys didn't have good games, they weren't going to win.
But I'm not saying they willingly checked out. I think it was one of those things where the pressure of night after night, if I suck, we're going to lose tonight. I just don't think you can do that.
But why would you take it all the way to a game seven and then decide that?
Well, no, I think it happened a little bit earlier, to be honest. I think when they blew that game six, I think that was their chance, basically. But they tried to give away game five, too, and probably would have if Marbury hadn't got hot. Midway through that series, they found out KG wasn't coming back. And I think mentally that shifted the mindset of some of those guys. Hey, I have one more question because we did that. We did our title picks. A team, I feel like this year there could be another Orlando type situation, somebody making a jump that we're not totally expecting. If you had to pick a team, who would it be? Right now.
What are you basing that on? I mean, look, you got all that timber in the East.
I'm saying a long shot bet. That if I'm looking at the Vegas board right now and I see that all those teams in that 15-1 to 25-1 range, a team that could make the finals potentially if a lot of things broke their way.
The Dallas Mavericks.
I knew he was going there.
Portland Trailblazers. I said that because there is no such team. There's too much timber at the top of this league. How are you going to get past San Antonio and L.A. in the West? Boston, Orlando, and Cleveland in the East.
But couldn't we have said that last year with Orlando?
No.
The thing is you don't have to get past all those teams. Chances are you're not going to have to face all of the
top
teams.
Okay, in the East, you got to beat two of them.
But I mean, like,
Orlando was a 60-win team that we were doubting all year. They were up there the whole time.
How about Toronto? How about 66-1 to win the title right now? How about the Phoenix Suns at 50-1?
I don't like either one of those.
How about
the Blazers? What are the Blazers?
22-1.
Wait, you guys are blowing my mind now. First of all,
Dallas is 33-1.
Plotting Toronto's moves a minute ago.
No, I'm just throwing out. I'm throwing out teams. I'm
Simmons
throwing out teams.
Simmons murdered the Raptors today in his part two of his zillion word summer wrap up.
I said it for 2010, those were good moves. For 12, 13, and 14, bad moves.
Steiny Mo, we've already decided that Bill Simmons in print and Bill Simmons in any other form, particularly face to face or voice to voice,
is a pushover?
Is a puppet.
How dare you?
Good point.
I can't believe you would say that. What about Houston?
Give me some reason to say otherwise. Give me some defense of that. Give me some indication that you are not a straw puppet.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
That you're not made out of felt. That you don't have those little googly eyes that you stick on with glue. Tell me that.
Are you saying that I would write something, but then if I saw that person, I would act the opposite?
Yeah, I'm saying that.
When is Dunleavy on the podcast?
Mr. Isaiah Thomas.
Hey, you got to hand it to me for going to actually sit man-to-man with Isaiah after he said he was going to kill me. I get credit
right,
for that.
Right, I want to know, did he rub your belly or did he scratch you behind the ears first?
You have to read about it in my book. How about this one? How about the Miami Heat at 33-1?
Hey, if they get Boozer and Odom,
yeah, that's interesting.
We'll entertain that conversation.
But I mean, that's you're betting on the odds, basically hoping that they get those guys. Denver Nuggets 14-1. I agree with Buke. I think that's like a year after something goes wrong kind of season for them, right? I can't imagine.
Which one?
Denver.
No, Denver's done.
Wow. Denver. Well, cancel their season then.
No. They had their big push.
Yeah. Utah.
They're not going to get better from here. Utah. They're
20-1. Utah's 20-1.
And that was the case against the Billups trade. That as great as it made them and it exceeded all expectations last year, none of us saw that coming. How much of a difference he made, but now adding to that cast is going to get real expensive. They've made a couple nice moves based on their limitations. You know, Lawson, by all accounts, is a pretty decent pickup for the future. a follow will help them, but that's the problem there. I mean, how much
can they as great as Billups was, we saw in the playoffs exactly why Detroit traded him.
But they should have gotten more.
Well, okay, but what were they going to get more?
And yes, they could have.
When you look at the from who?
I think if they had waited till February, they could have flipped them to Portland.
Come on, that's a what woulda coulda shoulda.
It's not a woulda coulda shoulda. You can't tell me that Iverson.
You gotta tell me that. By the way, if you ever sat down and talked with Joe Dumars,
yeah,
you would be Chad Ford esque in the way that you would be standing on your hood waving a flag.
You're telling me Detroit in February couldn't have traded Chauncey Billups to Portland for Jared Bayless and Rafe LaFrance or something like that?
No.
Oh,
I'm not so sure about that.
Has
Portland ever taken on money? Has Portland pulled the trigger on something expensive yet?
I think they would have last year if there was the right guy.
And if you waited till February and you didn't make that deal, now you're really stuck.
Okay, so why extend Rip Hamilton then?
I can't explain everything. I'm just telling you why the Billups deal
was
made
stupid
sense for Detroit.
It did not. It made no sense.
It made plenty of sense.
It did not.
The thing that you're leaving out of the equation when
they made
you
it hoping
about
they would still make the playoffs and that they would then get all the cap relief that they subsequently got.
Congratulations. They got Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva.
Hey, when you say Detroit didn't get enough for him, the part you're leaving out of the equation is playing with all those athletes in Denver took Billups to another level, too. He changed the culture.
Thank you very much.
He's
very nice
George neutralizer, but he also got a benefit out of that trade, too, that made him look even better.
Huge.
Well, that's
huge.
Definitely true.
Chauncey Billups next to Carmelo Anthony, right there.
He would not be the same guy in Detroit if he was still there.
Do you guys is there anybody on your radar screen for next season that you think could turn the league upside down potentially? Because I feel like Durant is going to have just a monster year.
I think Kevin Durant's going to be a monster. And I got to tell you, I think James Harden, you couldn't have found a better fit to add to that group of guys. As tight as those three guys, Westbrook, Green, and Durant are, James Harden is going to fit in perfectly there.
That said, how sweet would it have been if Rubio had gone?
Yeah, I still wish they'd taken Rubio. I know Harden is
going to fit in. How many times would I be
but
driving from Dallas to Oklahoma City to watch that?
How far of a drive is that?
It's three. I mean, it's very doable.
Rubio on that team would have been so much fun. But I think, you know, whatever, Harden, personality standpoint, he seems like a glue guy, maybe like the ceiling of a better Ariza, basically. So, yeah. But I love the stuff I'm reading about Durant. Like, it really seems like he really wants it. You know, that's the feeling you're getting from these articles. Like, this is a guy who can now smell it and is ready to become a franchise superstar type of guy.
Yep.
I also think Derrick Rose. I like what I'm reading about him, too.
Oh,
yeah.
A little
taste of it. And
yeah, he showed us already, though.
No, but I'm saying
that
this
was no
year
mirage.
Now. But now it's like he's now ready to become, you know, can he pass Chris Paul this year? Can he enter that class? Let's see. See something from him.
I would expect that he will.
Any comeback guys? Elton Brand?
No.
No?
No.
Steiny Moe?
Well, sounds like Blake Griffin's going to have to be on the comeback list, according to you.
Well, he could be back in a month, though. How about, I'm trying to think, Michael Redd, maybe?
You know what I'm curious to see is, I'm curious to see what the Warriors are going to be with Nelly having all his guys that he wanted. And he's got, I mean, he can throw so many different looks at you with, you know, 15 scorers. They're still not going to be a threat in the playoffs, but, and they may be an absolute disaster. The chemistry issues from last year may still take that team under and may bury them. But I just wonder if there's like one more crazy little run out of a bunch of guys who are just crazy.
Literally and figuratively. I mean, no team has more scorers than that team. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
they might have. Next season, they might have seven guys score 35 or more in a game.
Yeah.
Which I can't remember the last time. I don't even think the Phoenix teams had seven guys like that.
Talk about breakout guys. You better have Randolph on the list.
Randolph, but is he getting too much hype now as the breakout guy?
No, I don't think he is. He really getting that much?
Oh, in the blogosphere he was. All the Summer League reports I read.
I don't think he's getting. I think he's still an under the radar kind of guy. In the main.
Well, I would agree with that, but I think he's. The problem is that team, and I don't like putting a crazy guy with a crazy team, a young crazy guy with a crazy team, and expecting him to be everything that he can be. It's too volatile a mix. If he was on Phoenix right now, I'd say watch out. He's about to blow the roof off. Golden State. I mean, that whole thing. It could easily swing either way. And Randolph, in spite of the numbers, could easily go either way too. If he has another, if he and Nelly have another blow up, or they have another issue, you know, a lot as I mean. At least half of it's going to be on Randolph, whether he deserves it or not.
Right.
And I don't. It's a very precarious situation.
You know what the long shot bet I like the most out of all these long shots is? I think it's Phoenix, just at 50-1. Like, what happens if Amari comes back in a contract year and miraculously turns into 2005 Amari again? I mean, not inconceivable, right? It's not, you can't rule that out. It might happen. I'm not saying it would, but 50-1 odds, not bad.
Well, it's only going to happen if Clark is ready to play right away and Channing Frye can play. I mean, are you
Lopez thinking
on those things?
I'm not. I'm looking at these long, long shot teams and thinking, like, you know, if they get everybody healthy, if Richardson has a big comeback year, Nash has another good year, Amari plays well, they could get to like the 4 seed. I don't know. Not crazy. Somebody
it's not crazy, but it doesn't. Here's the thing: is that you look at all these things that have to tip just right, and you're saying if those did, they would make the 4th seed.
It's never a long shot league. That's the thing. I mean, what do we have? 7 champions in 25 years? Isn't that where we are right now?
Well, Buick made a good point earlier that I wanted to follow
up. I think that's in the past. I think we're going to see a new champion every year. The odds are very high that you're going to see two new teams in the finals every year. That the Lakers may be the last team in a long time that we see go back to the finals.
We have so few teams spending in the league. How is that going to happen?
Well, you made
because even the best of teams are hedging their bets. They're trying to do it on the cheap, and one injury. All these teams are one injury from going from title contention to scraping into the playoffs.
Well, you look at the last 5 years. We've had 5 different Eastern Conference champions, right?
Yep.
And then we've had 06 was Dallas, 07 was San Antonio, and then the last 2 the Lakers. So, yeah, I mean, you could definitely say it's been pretty topsy-turvy every year practically. And even I think if the Lakers don't get Gasol in 08, then they're not representing the West, obviously. So that was a little fluky. But I'm with Buick. I think it does seem like it's a little bit more of a crapshoot now, which is why.
And we're looking at that again come this season. I mean, even if the Lakers get Lamar back, I guess I put them at the top. But I really, at the end of the day, the switch from Artest to Ariza, to me, has already set their fate,
and
not in a good way.
But Bynum's going to keep getting better.
We hope. We certainly didn't sit in the playoffs.
He's got to be healthy. Fisher obviously may have given his last gasp.
Yeah.
Kobe is measuring, had to measure last season.
But I remember the last time we did one of these and we were saying Fisher can't throw the ball in the ocean. He can't do, but when the money's on the table, the shots go in.
I mean, he did make 2.
If you put him in the situation, he can still give you that key shot or two. But without, I mean, you guys are underselling what Ariza did.
I am not underselling anything.
That run. He was a huge part of what they did, particularly defensively. If he's not there to guard Hedo Turkoglu, I think all the matchups change.
No, we're all in agreement there. All I'm saying is I think if Odom comes back, you can see the reasons why the Lakers want Artest, but not on a 5-year deal. I mean, that's more my
See, that's the other thing too. That's the thing that the Rockets are laughing about. They go, we had him on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
And we could barely keep him in. He's now got 5 years and he knows this may be his last contract, and he's in LA. Oh, the opportunities.
I got to say, I thought this is going to sound crazy, but I thought Ariza was like the number one free agent this year. I'm not saying he was the best, but yep. I'm saying going into July, I thought here's the guy. If I was going to spend $33 million on somebody, this is the guy I'd want. He's 23. Yep. He's getting better. He did it in the playoffs. This guy that came through time and time again, I thought was their toughest player other than Kobe, like fighting for loose balls and stuff. I just thought he grew into like a Robert Horry type guy. I'm not saying he's Robert Horry, but you know what I mean? Like that glue guy that just does stuff and makes plays.
Cleveland agrees with you because I think they were trying to give him the same deal.
Who was?
I think Cleveland agrees with you.
And I think if they had gotten him, I would probably pick them to win the finals. They had to go the hodgepodge route, but I don't think the Laker fans, I'm surprised that they're so willing to say, Artest is going to be, we're fine with Artest. Like, it's almost like they didn't really appreciate what Ariza did, if that makes
sense.
There
is that school of thought that Phil needs this kind of challenge to stay plugged in. I mean, if you buy that theory, Artest makes a little bit more sense.
But I mean, the other part that nobody mentions with the Ariza thing is he went to UCLA. Like, I know he wasn't there for 4 years, but this is somebody that everybody in California really liked. And they were attached to, and they were touting his virtues the last couple of years. And then he finally blooms in the playoffs, and he plays fantastic. And then they just get rid of him. It's bizarre.
Here's the thing. The way his agent handled it,
terrible.
Totally mishandled it.
Terrible.
And you got to keep in mind that it's the same. It's Andrew Bynum's agent,
right?
And there was already some bad feeling there. And so, the really interesting part for me, and I don't really have a definitive answer as to why, is that the Lakers who Dr. Buss over the last couple of years has demonstrated that he watches the bottom line a little more closely than we remember him in the past. But you just had a group that won a championship and avenged a huge disappointment a year ago.
Yeah.
And now you're just taking such a hard line. You know, Trevor Ariza and Lamar Odom, whatever the criticism may be of Odom, they're good guys. I mean, they're not malicious guys. And so to take this, and from an emotional standpoint, I don't know that they're the greatest guys to take this hard line with. It was almost like, we want to get rid of you by the way they negotiated.
I agree.
That's the part about the way the Lakers have done things here that I do not understand. I feel that all the goodwill, all the things that they created, the kumbaya from last year, all of that is gone already.
There's the other place where I'm stumped. If you didn't go over the mid-level, you've now replaced Artest with Ariza, so you didn't have to go over the mid-level. That was the big fear, that they were going to have to go over the mid-level to pay Ariza. When they didn't go over the mid-level and they signed Artest instead, that was supposed to make keeping Lamar easier.
Yeah.
So now when you're talking about maybe losing him too, that's where it just becomes ridiculous.
Well, who else was bidding for Ron Artest? That's the other part I don't get. You're giving Artest a 5-year contract. Who else was even offering him 2 years? Did he have any other suitors?
Well, Cleveland was in, but I don't know that it was. I mean, it certainly couldn't have been a 5-year deal.
Or 4 or 3. I mean, I just can't imagine anybody would give that guy more than 2 years at this stage of his career, and especially after the way he slipped.
Well, maybe the Lakers knew at that point that Lamar was going to go the way it did, and they felt like they got to lock him up. Well, but you know what? Here's the thing on that. I mean, they knew how it was going to go. It wasn't like Lamar said, I'm not going to take that deal. He just didn't respond to it right away. They didn't give him a deadline and say, okay, you know what? You got to tell us by tomorrow or we're taking the deal off the table. They just unilaterally said, okay, we're taking it off the table, which leads me to believe
that it was more that Dr. Buss kind of looked at it and went, holy cow, I'm paying an awful lot, and this guy eats an awful lot of gummy bears. Maybe I don't want to do this, and had a second thought. That's the only explanation I have, because otherwise, standard practice is you give the guy a deadline, and then you pull it off the table.
Yeah, how can you get mad at a guy for talking to other teams? It is still called free agency, last I checked.
Well, I'm gonna throw this out here because this is something I've been thinking about since the finals. I thought the fact that Buss's young son, and I made fun of this in a column, but you know, all comedy aside, the fact that they did that, I thought was very strange. And now I'm wondering, like that combined with the free agency, are we sure Dr. Jerry Buss still has all his marbles?
It is sort of George Steinbrenner-ish.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Because I won't say if it's a friend that still works with the NBA or a friend that no longer works with the NBA, but he said, coming out of commercial, when he saw David Stern's face as he was about to present the trophy, he recognized the look as, oh, that's the David's really pissed off and he's holding it in and really wants to go nuts on somebody's face. Why does he look that way? And then when he gave the trophy to the young son, he realized Stern must have been just, you know, going bonkers that this guy who's in college basically is at Long Beach State. He's the guy who's accepting the NBA trophy. I think he was furious about that behind the scenes. But then now you look at the way the Lakers have handled this free agency and it's like, I don't know if, I don't know. It does look Steinbrenner-esque to me a little bit.
Maybe Louis Buss is calling the shots too.
Well, where was Jeannie Buss? Why didn't she accept the title? That's what I never understood about that.
That's a fair question. She's on Twitter. You could ask her.
I'll ask her. All right, fellas. Well, we're going to have to split this up into two parts. And it was a pleasure, as always. By the way, San Antonio is 10-1. And that looks like the best bet, in my opinion.
It felt so short.
I know. It was an hour and a half that went by very fast. Fellas, let's do it again. Enjoy the summer. Rick Bucher and Mark Stein on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline. Thank you.
Target the sign off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just breaking news, which frankly cannot go unstated. This summer, Subway is teaming up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for just $5 to some of the hottest Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See the nearest Subway for details.